read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Hold them in your hand, and you'll hippity hoppity clippity cloppity off to a different land.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Always love the book time, the book pick time that we have on the show. And it is terrific today because we have a dear friend of ours who has come all the way from Saratoga Springs to tell us about what is going on in the book world and wonderful books that we should pay attention to. Mike Hare is of Northshire Bookstore. They have stores in Saratoga Springs, New York, and Manchester Center, Vermont. He joins us this morning to present some of the finest authors and books that have made their way or are making their way to store shelves. Good morning, friend. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Great to see you, and thanks for having me here today.
Great to see you. Always a pleasure. All right, where would you like to begin?
We'll begin with a book called Homestand, and the author is Will Bardenwerper, which is an unusual name for the author, but an outstanding book, and it's about a not even minor league baseball team. It's a team in the Perfect Game Collegiate Baseball League called the Batavia Muck Dogs. That's been the name of the team for a while. Anyway, Batavia is located in western New York, as you know, between Buffalo and Rochester in that area. And what the book does very, very effectively is paint baseball the way that you kind of imagine baseball to be in terms of a community gathering, in terms of an oasis away from the pressures of the world. And what the author does very effectively is portray the 2022 season in Batavia following the Muck Dogs. He lives in Pittsburgh. He traveled back and forth many times to go to the games. He didn't see them all. The season's only about 2 months long. But the game itself has changed so in recent years, as any baseball fan knows, and he takes shots at Major League Baseball and the commissioner of baseball in particular for their actions of downgrading the minor leagues. Batavia was in the New York Penn League for some time. They were a minor league baseball team. Now they're not minor league anymore. They're in this amateur league. The players on the team are from Division II and Division III colleges and some pros that didn't quite make it as a professional or want to be baseball pro. So it's sort of a glorified collegiate game, as the name of the league attests. And what he did in this book and what he did in his life for this summer is gather a group of people who were very not at all alike. They had different political ideologies, if you will, different social backgrounds, and they gathered in this ballpark in Batavia, Dwyer Stadium, just to hang back and relax and watch the baseball games occurring on the field and developing these friendships. And it kind of runs counter from what to, you know, what he's saying in the book to what so much of the corporate mindset of Major League Baseball, any kind of a corporation type mindset, he's sort of speaking against in a very articulate and a very emotional way. And I couldn't recommend it highly enough. It's called Homestand. Just came out about a month or so ago, and Amsterdam has a team in the league. So it's basically set in upstate New York. And he also talks about politics. He talks about things that are going on. He talks about red state, blue state kind of dichotomy. So those sorts of issues are not put in the background. They're there. But what he talks about, you know, specifically within the book is how there is a way through sport, through friendship, through a sense of belonging to bond with people in a place where a baseball park is the kind of place where you want to be able to do that.
The name of the book is Homestand by Will Bardenwerper. Very cool. All right, next up.
Next up is Audition by Katie Kamimura, and this is a new work of fiction and very sophisticated book, and it's told in the first person by a middle-aged actress, middle-aged being 49 or 50. I'm getting in trouble in saying what middle-aged is, but she is at a restaurant at the beginning of the book, and this young man approaches her, and she's auditioning for a part, hence the title Audition, a part on the stage, and this young man comes up, and they kind of look, she thinks that he looks a little bit like her, and he introduces himself as her son, and you say, "I don't have, I can't have a son. I've never had a child before." "Oh no, I'm your son." "No, you're not." So it kind of it begins that way, mm-hmm. and then she auditions for the part. And this man, his name is Xavier, the young man, is part of the crew. He's kind of working on the play, on the set, and so forth. So they get to know each other, and she auditions for this part, and she's afraid she's over the hill, and she wants to prove that she can she still has it on the stage. The second part of the book, things shift. All of a sudden, Xavier moves in with this woman and her husband, and all of a sudden, he is her son. In the first part of the book, he was not, and how this happened is never made clear. And the way that the book is structured, it's the first-person narrative of this woman. Is she an unreliable narrator? Is the second part of the book the play that she's talking about in the first part of the book, for which she gets rave reviews, at least she says she does in the second part? So it's a very, it's only three people really that are in the play. The husband of the woman is also a character, and the narrator, and the quote-unquote son. And the way that the book is structured leaves you scratching your head all the way through in terms of what's really going on here. But the writing is just exquisite. I mean, she's a well-known author. She had a New York Times top 10 book a few years ago. I can't think of the name of it. I didn't happen to read that book. But anyway, it's really an outstanding book, and it's so immersive. It's less than 200 pages, so it's not a long read by any stretch of the imagination, but it demands your concentration, and your concentration is definitely rewarded as you try to get through and figure out exactly what's happening in this novel.
Audition by Katie Kitamura?
Kitamura, I believe.
Kitamura.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Next up.
The Fate of the Day by Rick Atkinson. And I know you're interested in this book too, Joe, because Rick will be speaking at the Saratoga Springs City Center on May 30th, about 6 weeks from now. The book itself comes out on April 29th, and The Fate of the Day is his second in the trilogy of his Revolutionary War series. His first book was The British Are Coming, which came out 7 or 8 years ago. And The Fate of the Day deals with the middle years of the Revolutionary War. Atkinson is a very detailed historian. He doesn't leave anything out, really. And he's talking about significant battles and events that happened in the middle years of the war, including the Battle of Saratoga. The Battle of Saratoga is mentioned very descriptively and very accurately within the context of this book, along with the battles of Brandywine and other battles as well. As a military historian, he's focusing on the military strategies and so forth. But I can't wait to hear you interview him when this happens on May the 29th. And we're very much looking forward to seeing him. And the book comes out in just a few weeks, 2 weeks from today, April the 29th.
April the 29th, and the event later in May and at the end of May. And I'm really looking forward to it. I've just started. It's a doorstop.
It is.
I'm greatly enjoying it. Very, very good.
It's about 600 pages, but all his books are about that long,
yeah.
Which is a testament to his scholarship. You know, all the work that he put in, he puts it in the book.
Yes.
So he's done the work.
And this is one of three. That's the
Yes,
other
and then there's
thing.
The third one coming. Who knows when? But
you put all those together.
Yeah,
that's quite a project.
Yes.
All right. So Rick Atkinson is the author of The Fate of the Day. And tickets are available. You can find out more about that by going to Northshire.com. All right, next.
The next book is Shakespeare, The Man Who Pays the Rent by Judi Dench. Getting back to the theater here, Judi Dench, people know from the Bond movies and from other films, but she got her start and still is likes to think of herself as a stage actress. And in this book, she's talking about Shakespeare and Shakespeare roles that she has had over about a 60-year career from her very start in the theater when she was a very young woman, a teenager really, or someone in her early 20s, nearly up until today. And she's talking about Shakespearean roles within the context of a female portraying these characters. So, for example, when she talks about King Lear, which she's performed in, she's talking about Regan and Goneril and Cordelia more so than King Lear. So she's going from the perspective of a female. It's actually an interview. She's interviewed by another actor, and she's very outspoken. She's very funny. She's very opinionated. She has a lot of great advice in terms of acting. If people want acting advice, you kind of pick up these little snippets from her, and she's certainly very good at it. I mean, she's been successful in movies and film for decades and decades. Very engaging person. It's just a lot of fun to read. Even if you know a little bit about Shakespeare, and you'll know quite a bit more when you finish the book.
I love the title, The Man Who Pays the Rent.
And
that's great.
Yeah.
Been very helpful in her career,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes. Absolutely.
The name of that book, Shakespeare, The Man Who Pays the Rent. Judi Dench is the author. Next up
is Keeping the Faith, and this is by Brenda Wineapple. This book came out last year, but I wanted to talk about it today because I think it's so good. And it's about the Scopes trial. And it's especially pertinent now because that happened 100 years ago this summer. John Scopes was a teacher in Tennessee, a young man, nothing extraordinary about him, but he became the plaintiff in this case about a Tennessee law that was passed in early 1925, which forbade the teaching of evolution in schools. In other words, creationism was the way to go in Tennessee, according to the Butler Act. That was the name of the law that was passed in Tennessee exactly 100 years ago. The American Civil Liberties Union was a brand new organization then. They wanted to test this case, and as usually happens, they find a test, you know, someone who would be volunteering essentially to bring the case to court, and John Scopes was the man. He agreed to do so, and the case was argued in the summer of 1925, and the community was Dayton, Tennessee, a small town in Tennessee. The book is fascinating because of the issues raised today, somewhat familiar.
Yep.
And that day, 100 years ago, are somewhat familiar today, certainly with book bans and so forth. And the two leading protagonists in the book are just hugely fascinating, important characters. One is William Jennings Bryan. He ran for president three times as a Democrat, lost all three times, to McKinley twice and to Taft the third time. He was the attorney in favor of the creationism argument. And Clarence Darrow was the attorney who was on the side of the evolution theory. And the two of them were both larger-than-life figures. Darrow represented terrorists. He represented anarchists. He was a very social liberal. Bryan, despite being a Democrat, was basically a conservative from the old mold of the 19th century Democratic Party as opposed to the 20th century or 21st century Democratic Party. And the two of them were known throughout the country, throughout the world, really. And they were adversarial in this book, and they went at each other tooth and nail. And Wineapple does a great job in terms of portraying these two characters and their history coming up to the Scopes trial in 1925. And then the trial itself was fascinating. It was called then and still is kind of known as the trial of the century, which is kind of a tribute to the importance of the trial. Think of the O.J. Simpson trial. You think of Sacco and Vanzetti. There are all kinds of trials that happened in the 20th century. Bruno Hauptmann of the Lindbergh kidnapping. All of the trials that happened during the 20th century could possibly be argued to be secondary to this one because those were trials of the moment, whereas what's being argued or what was argued in the Scopes trial is still being argued today 100 years later. So the trial itself is covered at the end of the book. It's very hot and steamy and sweaty. Bryan wore this pith helmet through Tennessee. He was an older man, and he wanted to keep the sun off the top of his head. And it's just a great book. Brenda Wineapple is the author. She's written quite a few great American histories before, and this is her newest. It came out last year, but it's called Keeping the Faith, and highly recommend it.
Excellent. All right, next up.
A Gorgeous Excitement by Cynthia Weiner, and this is a first-time author, and the title comes from a quote from Freud. He thought that to define cocaine, he described it as a gorgeous excitement. That was his definition of it. And the book is set in the 1980s, 1986 specifically, in the Upper East Side of New York City, and the book is based on a true story. It was called The Preppy Murder, and there was a murder of a young woman in 1986 in the Upper East Side of New York, and the perpetrator turned out to be a preppy, as they was the terminology of the day. And what Weiner does is reimagine this particular event in her fiction, and she's describing the lives of these young women who were in her 20s. They're in their 20s. It's the era of cocaine, certainly was very accessible then. It was the crack cocaine era as well. It was also the sort of the midpoint of the HIV/AIDS crisis in New York City. You get a great feel of the city at the time, and you really get a wonderful feel of what it was like to be young and free and with all this opportunity in front of you, yet still hampered by social restraints, hampered by problematic friendships, hampered by relationships. Certainly the problems were exacerbated by drugs, by alcohol, by sometimes going after the wrong guy, which some of these women did because they were attracted to this individual who turned out to be a very unsavory, murderous character. So it's based on the true story, but it is conveyed in a manner that feels very real to this day. I think it would feel real to people in that age bracket now, far away from that, as we are, but I think that it is a wonderful evocation of what it could be like to have these sorts of pressures put upon you when you have all the potential and when you have the world just kind of waiting for you. And that's even more pressure as well because of the constraints that are still inherent in terms of what's going on in your personal life. But it's called The Gorgeous Excitement, and it came out in January, I think. So it's a new book, not brand new, but just came out a few months ago. And Cynthia Weiner is a first-time author, and a wonderful debut. That another book that I certainly, being here with you, Joe, to like to recommend.
Excellent. Cynthia Weiner, A Gorgeous Excitement. Next up,
King of Kings by Scott Anderson. And this book doesn't come out till August the 5th, so we're jumping the gun a little bit on this, but I think it's worth jumping the gun about because it's really wonderful. And Anderson is a Middle Eastern historian. He wrote Lawrence in Arabia a few years ago, which was very popular and very successful. And this is his new book. And the King of Kings in this book is the Shah of Iran. The Shah of Iran ruled from the 1950s until the Iranian Revolution in 1979, and it goes back in history through his father, who is also the ruler. And in the beginning of the book, in the introductory comments, Anderson makes a statement that he backs up through the book, and he basically says that throughout history, or throughout the last 300-400 years of history, there are three revolutions that have had long-lasting international impact that can never be erased. And those revolutions were the American Revolution, circa 1776, the French Revolution a few years later, around 1789, and the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution of about 1917, 1918. And we look back in time to those three revolutions, and they all certainly did have lasting impacts in terms of the world, in terms of international relations, in terms of the economy, in terms of trade, in terms of all those things. And he stipulates at the beginning of the book that the Iranian Revolution should be categorized within that category of world-changing revolutions. And after reading the book, especially, I think he's right, because you think of the things that have happened in the last 45 years since that happened, in terms of OPEC, in terms of what the United States has been through in the Middle East, in terms of religious fundamentalism, in terms of the way the shift of power has changed, in terms of the way the world has changed since this revolution occurred. And the book, even though it goes into the history of the Shah of Iran and his father, it is specific to the events of 1978 to 1980 when the revolution takes place. The Carter administration does not come off very well in this book. Mm. The Carter administration was thought, in fact, a year before all this came down, Jimmy Carter hosted the Shah, and he told the world that the Iranian people love you because you're such a wonderful ruler, and things are so stable in Iran, and thank goodness, because other countries perhaps were not at that time, and still, of course, difficult today. But then a year later, the Shah of Iran was gone because, as it turned out, the public was not as fond of the Shah as Jimmy Carter thought that they were. And then we all know what's happened in the last 45 years. So all kinds of things have happened, but it began with the Ayatollah seizing power. And the book is, it's a bit of a doorstop book, too. It's about 500 or so pages. And I happened to get the opportunity to read it in advance, which I was so happy to do, because it's just a wonderfully researched book. Like Atkinson, very thorough, very accurate. Atkinson is a historic book that happened 200 years ago, whereas Anderson's book is something that we're still dealing with today in terms of geopolitical and economic and social and trade and religious issues that are still sort of offshoots of the Iranian Revolution. So it's much more contemporary. So the opinion that he has here is a little bit more pertinent, I suppose, than what Atkinson is doing with his history. But it's called King of Kings. The release date is August the 5th, so it's about 3.5 months out. And I can't wait to talk to you about it to our customers at the Northshire Bookstore, because it's a wonderful, wonderful book.
Terrific. King of Kings by Scott Anderson. All right. We got about 2 minutes.
Okay. I'd like to talk about a book called King, about Martin Luther King, and Hellhound on His Trail, which is about the search for King's killer. King by Jonathan Egg won the Pulitzer a few years ago, and it's a biography of Martin Luther King Jr. from the time he was born until his tragic death in Memphis, Tennessee. And King is so wonderfully portrayed in this book as a very human individual. He drank, he smoked, he didn't take care of himself. He ran around with other women. He was not a saint, but what he did publicly was just saint-like in terms of the way that he gathered people together, and being honored today in retrospect is certainly so so valid in terms of his career. And he was only 5'6". I didn't realize that until I read the book. He had such a big voice and such a big presence, but he was not a tall man. And Hellhound on His Trail is the story about the search for King's assassin, and it actually talks about the assassin himself. Hellhound on His Trail is written by Hampton Sides, another wonderful historian who's from Memphis. So he has a little insight in terms of the place where King was assassinated by James Earl Ray, and Hellhound on His Trail comes across as a true crime story, and it is, because it talks in detail about how Ray got to the point where he and King's paths crossed in Memphis with, unfortunately, horrific results.
Two incredible books, King by Jonathan Eigen, and also Hellhound on His Trail by Hampton Sides. You can find out more information by going to northtrier.com. You can see the entire list by going to wamc.org/roundtable. Mike Hare is bookseller extraordinaire at North Trier Books in Saratoga and Manchester. Always great to have you on the show. Anything else you want to mention in our last?
I think that's good. That's enough. I hope it's enough. It was fun. I mean, I can go on for another half hour, but time is. I do that in the store often enough. So when you come in, Joe,
It's always a plus when I get to see you and get to talk books. Mike, thank you very much. We'll be back right after this.